Broadcasting live from high atop Shepherd's Mountain, it's the Dr. Carol Show with Dr. Carol and Al. Just a great way to change your day, your mind, your body, and your soul. So call a friend, call us, or just hang tight and enjoy. The Dr. Carol Show starts right now.
Welcome back to the Dr. Carol Show. Good to have you with us on this Thursday, April 19th on Shepherd's Mountain with Dr. Carol.
We have a studio full today, and this is a great program close to my heart. The Doctors Cavusi, Dr. K.M. Shahar and Parviz Cavusi from Austin Fertility and Reproductive Medicine. And you've heard us say fertility. If you're just joining us, the Doctors Cavusi have been helping couples build the family that they want for a number of years. Dr. K.M. has been here in Austin for over 30 years. And now his two sons, fellowship trained in both male and female fertility treatments, are with him and offering wonderful services for the full range of fertility problems. What we want to talk about a little bit, let's begin with some of the things that can make it more likely for an individual to conceive. And let me start with you, Dr. Parviz, on the male side. That's your specialty. What are some things that men might need to be aware of that make it more likely for them to father a child when they're ready?
Sure. Well, first to just address the point of male fertility overall.
Good. Yes.
You know, we typically focus on the woman's side when we think of fertility, but actually, you know, in the 1 in 7 couples that have difficulty achieving a pregnancy in a year from the time that they start trying, about 20% of those couples is solely due to a male factor, just something going on the guy's side. Another 30 to 40% of the time, there's a contributing male factor along with the female factor. So at least half, 50 to 60% of the time, the man is involved. So some of the things that men can do to optimize their fertility potential, a lot of it are lifestyle habit issues. We know that men who smoke, tobacco is very bad for sperm. The toxins in tobacco are actually found around the sperm cells and in the semen when you look for them there, and that's very detrimental for sperm production. Marijuana, other drugs are very bad for sperm production. Alcohol, more than 1 to 2 drinks a day, can be bad for sperm production. And then overall fitness, health overall, things that doctors have been telling their patients for hundreds of years, you know, good diet, good exercise is good for fertility potential for men as well.
So if it's good for your heart, well, it's probably good for your fertility also.
Absolutely.
And I understand there's been some recent data on the male side that body mass index or being overweight may also be a factor for sperm, not only for women.
Absolutely. There was a very recent study that was just published that was a meta-analysis looking at 14 trials that were done, including over 10,000 men. And men that had a higher BMI or were considered overweight or obese had lower sperm counts than men that were considered normal weight. There are several mechanisms that we attribute this to. One is that when we put on more fat cells, those fat cells turn a man's testosterone into estrogen. You want to have a regular ratio between your testosterone and estrogen. And when you put more fat cells on, you produce more estrogen that throws that ratio off. Also, that we know that heat is bad for sperm production.
Right.
And when men get obese, they're putting on more fat cells in the lower pelvis and the upper scrotum. That heat transfer can be bad for sperm production as well.
And I know people have probably heard about bicycle riders or long-haul truck drivers because of the increased temperature may have an effect. I never thought of that particular connection with the weight, but it all fits together.
Absolutely.
Dr. Shahar, on the female side, talk about some of the things that women need to be aware of that may affect their fertility that hopefully they can do something about.
So my father, Dr. K.M. Cavusi, and myself, when we talk to our patients about lifestyle changes, when they ask us,
yes,
you know, what can we do that would improve our chances for pregnancy, aside from all the fertility treatments that we offer the patients, obviously, from a lifestyle standpoint, you know, some of the things, there's some of the same overlapping situations and scenarios from the male side also. You know, smoking for women, it's obviously detrimental to almost every aspect of health.
Yes.
We know that. It's been found that the byproducts of smoking, cotinine, can actually, the tobacco byproduct can be found in the follicular fluid around the eggs, actually. So it can basically break down any barrier in the body and be all pervasive, get to every part of the body. And it decreases pregnancy rates by about 50%. That's been shown in a lot of studies. And when somebody stops smoking, then it can try to approximate those normal pregnancy rates again. So it's interesting what a powerful motivator that is.
Exactly. And I understand that there are some fertility centers that actually will press a woman to stop smoking and not offer the higher order assisted reproduction until Correct. She successfully stops. I don't know if that's your firm policy, but I know it makes a difference.
We really advocate it. And a lot, you'd be surprised a lot of time, and you probably know from your own experience, yes. Dr. Carroll, you've seen it, I'm sure. Unfortunately, you tell somebody they might get a cancer, they won't stop smoking a lot of times. You tell somebody they can't have a baby, they'll stop pretty fast.
Sure.
It's interesting. It's a big, big motivator.
The same as for some women, the vanity. If you tell them it'll give them wrinkles or they'll right. look older sooner, you know, right. some of those factors may be better motivators.
So interestingly enough, you know, they'll have a better life. It'll be better for everybody in their family, everybody around them, their friends, their spouse, their kids, everything, their fertility. So it's interesting how that can happen sometimes. Of course, caffeine's another lifestyle change that can be made. If somebody drinks more than 300 milligrams of caffeine per day, it can help with fertility rates and decrease miscarriage rates. And there are multiple studies to show that. So that's a very good way to go about trying to make a lifestyle change as well. Some people, when they smoke marijuana, of course, you know, they smoke marijuana recreationally, you know, they're going to have decreased pregnancy rates as well. So we always advocate people stop any kind of polysubstance abuse, alcohol, moderate to increased amounts, and depends on the study and the definition of moderate, decrease it, eliminate it. It's definitely going to help with pregnancy rates. So all those things are detrimental to pregnancy, basically.
I know you've been doing this every day, but when I see a couple who wants to have a baby, I tell them, you know, both alcohol and tobacco are bad for eggs and sperm. If you want a baby, those are two of the things you have to be aware of.
Yes, ma'am.
We alluded to it earlier, but talk for a little bit about the weight factor for women sure. with the very, very high and increasing rates of obesity and being overweight in this country. That's making our job tougher, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not this black and white, but there are two kind of categories for, you know, in terms of obese women who are trying to get pregnant. One is your obese woman who ovulates every month or may not have what's called polycystic ovary syndrome.
Right.
And then there's the other type of woman who's obese who actually might have what's called polycystic ovary syndrome, which is about 10% of reproductive age women, where a woman won't ovulate every month or release an egg every month. And there are a lot of hormonal changes. It's not an A to B to C to D phenomenon. There are a myriad of things that could be happening in the body that result in a lack of or infrequent ovulation. And hormones like luteinizing hormone or LH are not spiking the way they should before somebody ovulates. There's a change in the pulsatile nature of its secretion on a daily basis, and estrogen levels are very different. I mean, if somebody has more fat cells, they're actually converting more hormone into estrogen, and they can have hyperinsulinemia or high insulin levels in their blood also, somewhere in between normal and diabetes, on their way towards diabetes with polycystic ovary syndrome in about 60% of those women. So again, there's your obese patient without polycystic ovary syndrome, there's your obese patient with polycystic ovary syndrome. Both of those situations are going to make pregnancy inefficient. You know, if somebody's not ovulating every month, they don't have a monthly try of getting pregnant, number one.
That's right.
There's a higher miscarriage rate. And if somebody's obese, every marker along the spectrum, getting pregnant, staying pregnant, you know, preterm delivery, all those things are affected, basically.
I know you probably tell your patients similar things. One thing that I like to discuss with them is if you're overweight, you don't necessarily have to get back to an ideal body weight to improve your chances of getting pregnant.
Correct.
A decrease, losing a portion of that extra weight, helps the whole reproductive system work a little more efficiently.
Correct. About 10% can actually make a big difference.
And that's, when you think of it, breaking it down into smaller amounts, that can make it a lot more palatable, a lot more
right.
something they can go after.
Right.
Dr. Kim Kavusi, you've been dealing with women and couples with these kinds of issues for many, many years. Have you seen any change in the kinds of fertility factors and the problems that you're dealing with over your decades of helping couples with this?
Yes, I've seen more patients are seeking to form their family at older age.
Yes.
And significantly has increased because women are more going to their education, spend time for their degrees, and then when they get to a career, it takes time. So usually, we see more patients, women at the older age, that they are trying to get pregnant and form their family, and that's what we're dealing most these days than we did deal 25, 30 years ago.
And when women do get older, in their older 30s or in their 40s, the treatment options become more difficult, and even with treatment, their chances of pregnancy aren't as good as younger. I know, again, that's a factor that makes all our jobs a little tougher. if you had to talk to women who were, say, approaching that age in their 30s or younger 30s or later 30s, how soon should they seek help if they're having problems getting pregnant?
Usually I tell these patients that if they come to me at age 30, for example, or at age 30, I would advise them if they are ready physically, mentally, financially, they are ready, they should start trying before age 35. And as they get past the age 35, it's going to be more difficult, especially when they get close to 40. It's definitely going to be more difficult.
Dr. Scharrer, if a couple is trying to get pregnant and they have any way to do so, how long should they try on their own before seeking some help?
Well, basically, if a woman's having a period every month and there are no other known factors, just from a history standpoint, if it seems like she's ovulating every month and there isn't something that, you know, pain that suggests endometriosis,
right,
or
right,
irregular cycles, if a woman's under 35 years old, it's suggested to try for a year with monthly tries. And if they're over 35, for about 6 months, just because of that. Dr. K,
like your father, Dr. K, was talking about, after age 35, it gets more difficult, so you don't want to wait very long.
Correct. I mean, the per-month pregnancy rates start dropping even in the early 30s, and most certainly by the mid-30s, and particularly by age 37, it really starts dropping. So if general population statistics says that women basically in their early 30s have about a 20 to 25% chance a month of getting pregnant if there aren't any factors, and 85% of couples are going to be pregnant in that first year of trying, that's the recommendation at this point.
And Dr. Parviz, if a couple is wanting some help to get pregnant, just another moment or two, we're running short on time, on how important it is that the male get evaluated too, that this is both parties have to be involved.
Absolutely. So we're talking about the percentages of time that the man is involved in infertility. And certainly the main screening test that we look at is the semen analysis, which is one of the preliminary tests that's done for a couple that's having difficulty achieving a pregnancy.
Right.
If there are some abnormalities in that, we recommend that the man is evaluated, sooner rather than later to see if there are correctable causes or what can be done to improve his fertility potential.
Does age make much of a difference for men?
So we're a bit behind on our studies and understanding of aging on effect on male reproduction. However, even though we don't have good longitudinal studies, we do have some studies that show that the concentration or the number of sperm per milliliter does drop, as does the motility, the ability of the sperm to swim when men get into their fourth, fifth decades of life, typically more after the age of 50. But still, 50% of men in their 80s still have sperm in the semen.
So it doesn't go down as quickly for women, but there is some decrease. Being that this is a topic so close to my heart, I know we could talk for a very long time, but we only have about a minute or so left. How can people find you guys if they want some help to have a family, to help to create a family?
Well, our office number is 512-444-1414, and our website is www.austinfertility.com, and we'll do everything we can to help our couples.
I've checked your website. Lots of good information. You guys are out there helping couples know what the services are available. I apologize that our time isn't longer, but I've sure enjoyed this bit of time that we have had. And again, if you're wanting some help from these three very fine doctors, austinfertility.com, check them out, and I'm sure they can do a lot to help you. Thank you so much to all three of you for joining, and to Aaron from Elizabeth Christian for helping make this possible.
Thank you, Dr. Carroll. 29 and a half after the hour. We can take a break and come back in just a moment. We want to thank our doctors for being with us today. Coming tomorrow, I'll tell you what, building trust between you and your spouse. Also, too, preserving your vision. That's all tomorrow on the Naturally segment here on the Dr. Carroll Show Friday edition. We'll take a break. Be right back on this April 19th. Don't you go anywhere.